the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Well, next week it's the Masters, and of course the scene of a remarkable, glorious triumph by Rory McIlroy last year. Rory McIlroy, Ireland's greatest ever golfer, you could say Ireland's greatest ever sports person, is the subject of a terrific new biography by our next guest, Alan Shipnuck. Alan's been with us previously about books he wrote about Phil Mickelson and also about the disruption caused by LIV to global professional golf. But he's now written Rory, the heartache and triumph of golf's most human superstar. Alan Shipnuck, thank you very much for joining us.
I'm delighted to be here. Thanks for having me.
It is a terrific read. There was so much I'd forgotten over the last 20 years of Rory McIlroy's career, and it's nearly 20 years now as a professional at this stage. But I want to start by actually asking you about the last chapter, because there will be many people who will be watching the Masters next week to see if Rory McIlroy can defend his title. And I think they deserve to sort of remember what was one of the most extraordinary final days in sport. You've been around golf an awful long time. Tell us a little bit about what made that day last year so extraordinary.
Well, it wasn't really a round of golf. It had very little to do with birdies and bogeys. It was watching this great champion and the angels and demons that were on his shoulder and this sort of metaphysical battle. I mean, People forget that Rory shot the low round of the day on both Friday and Saturday at the Masters. He was playing the best golf of his life. He was in total control of his golf ball and his emotions. And then you come to Sunday and he hit some of the worst shots in Masters history, and also some of the best. And it was just absolutely riveting to watch him try and bring out from within himself this victory that he's chased his whole life and that meant so much to him. And so, I say this in the book, it's like the reason that that victory resonated so widely with so many people. Rory as a transcendent talent, and none of us can hit a golf ball the way he can, but that victory was about much more basic things. It was about believing in yourself. It was about never giving up on your dreams, about overcoming your fears. And that's completely relatable no matter who you are and what you do for a living. And so I think that's why the whole world got swept up in it. It wasn't because he won a golf tournament. It was because he conquered himself and all his doubts and all his fears. And it just made it so thrilling to watch.
And it's thrilling to read as you go through the chapter in the book as well. But what's also fascinating is, and you start the book in some respects with this as well as dealing with it in that chapter, in that a lot of people thought that he was going to then suddenly be liberated, and that the man who hadn't won a major title since 2014 would suddenly be back in contention to win everything, that the demons would have been exorcised. And yet he seems to have gone into something of a funk for the rest of the year, including one foul-mouthed tirade at you and practice area before he came to Kildare and the Irish Open last September. And it seems that maybe he didn't expect it, but the love that he got from people here in Ireland seemed to just lift him again.
Absolutely. Yeah, Rory had a little existential crisis after he won the Masters. It's relatable, you know, after you spend your whole life chasing one thing and then you get it. And, you know, now what do you do next? And it took him a period of months to figure that out. And there's no doubt that the Irish Open was a very, very important piece of that, to come over there and you know, show off the green jacket for the first time ever in public in Ireland, and the warm embrace of the home fans and all the love he felt and all the support. It just reignited his passion for golf, and it refocused him on, you know, who he is and what he does, which is provide thrills for golf fans. And that victory was so epic, with the eagle putt on the 72nd hole and then winning the playoff. And you can see how visibly moved that that Rory was. And, you know, his comments after that were so insightful. You know, he said, "I'm just so happy I could do it for these people who've supported me." You know, it was much bigger than him. It wasn't a personal triumph. It was for everybody else. I think that's when, you know, there's a lot of great voices in this book, I think. And you know, Paul McGinley's one of the best. And he was so insightful about Rory to me. And, you know, he said, when his heart is on fire, when he's chasing a goal, that's when he's at his best. And you could see his heart just ignite there at the Irish Open. And of course, he carried that form into the Ryder Cup, where he was a towering figure. He went on to win the Race to Dubai, which is, you know, the order of merit, as we used to call it. That's he's chasing the all-time record there. It's very important to him. And so, yeah, he had a little swoon during the summer, there's no doubt. But Rory's back. And, of course, he's been a little slowed down by this back injury. But he's hardly done. I think there's a lot more thrills in store for golf fans by way of Rory in the years to come.
It's very interesting you mentioned Paul McGinley, because Paul McGinley does feature prominently in the book. He said about how confident he was that Rory McIlroy would be a driving force for Europe in the Ryder Cup last autumn. But there's a really interesting bit early on where Paul McGinley also talks about the influence that Darren Clarke had on him, but more so on Rory McIlroy, living the sort of the superstar lifestyle, and that a teenage Rory McIlroy aspired to that, to the big houses, the fast cars, the champagne lifestyle. Sometimes, you know, maybe sports psychologists worry about players getting distracted, but the way you paint it in the book, it seems that that actually gave Rory McIlroy something to aim for as much as winning the titles.
Yeah, I mean, it's well documented that, you know, he came from kind of a working class family, and, you know, Jerry and Rosie McIlroy, they put an incredible amount of effort into supporting Rory's golf. And, you know, as a kid, he played in Florida and Hawaii and California, and they wanted to expose him to the best competition and for him to have the best equipment. And there wasn't much left over for all the other goodies. And so, you know, Rory, he hungered after that material success. It's part of what drove him early in his career. And yeah, Darren Clarke was a symbol of that, because he lived large and Rory aspired to that. And, you know, the McIlroys still love the finer things in life, you know, the watches, the cars, the mansions, the jets, you know, Rory, of course, but Jerry too, he loves that stuff. But what's important is they still remember, you know, where they're from, and they still retain that sort of humility. And so with someone else, like maybe an Ian Poulter with his Ferraris, it can be a little off-putting. It's like he's showing off. But with Rory, it's more understated. It's just more like, I worked my whole life and these are some of the rewards, but it doesn't really define him in the way that it probably did Darren Clarke and some other athletes. Because I think pretty quickly, once Rory had everything he wanted, he realized it's not about the cars and the houses. It's about the trophies. It's about legacy. It's about history. And that's what he's been chasing. And when you do that, the material rewards will follow, but that's not what drives him. And of course, that's part of why he was never interested in LIV Golf. It was about the history of the game. It wasn't just about taking a bag full of money. So, I think there's no doubt that was a motivation early in his life, but I think he transcended that a long time ago.
He's only 36, and yet he's been around in the sporting consciousness for so long, winning the silver medal as the best amateur in the Open in 2007, the year Patrick Harrington won the overall award, and turning pro very quickly after that. What is striking about the book is that so many of the names have changed. He's gone through almost a number of eras in professional golf, where various people who challenged him during the 2010s have now gone or are largely irrelevant. He has had relatively few physical injuries, although clearly he's had a back issue going into the Masters next week. Psychologically, what is it about him that's managed to keep him going for the last two decades or so since he turned pro? And how much longer do you think he'd be interested in doing that?
Yeah, there's a sort of a... Rory has managed to retain this sort of childlike joy at playing golf. And he's talked about this many times, that there's periods when he's kind of lost that. He's had to rediscover it. And, you know, he said after, you know, him and Shane Lowry won the team event in New Orleans a couple of years ago, that just sort of rekindled that joy of just playing with your friend and trying not to let them down and try and hit shots for the team and not just for yourself. And of course, you see that in the Ryder Cup as well. And I think that's fundamental. You know, professional golf can be a grind, and you can see with a lot of players, the pressure, the scrutiny, the travel, the being away from home, all these things, it turns into a job for them and they lose some of that joy. And I think Rory's managed to retain it because he just has a love affair with golf. And it's what he was put on this planet to do. And he recognizes he has this gift and he wants to fulfill it. And I think he almost feels an obligation to be the best he can be. And so that's really important. And I don't think that's going to go away, you know, at this point in his life. Rory cares deeply about his place in golf history. He reads about golf history. He venerates those who have come before him. And he hungers after the crown jewels of the sport. He wants to win an Open at St. Andrews. He wants to win a U.S. Open at Pebble Beach. He wants to win an Open at Portrush. You know, these are the things he's chasing. And I get into all this in the last chapter of the book. You know, I there's zero doubt in my mind that Rory's already one of the dozen greatest players of all time when you look at their record. And yet you could say, as good as he is and as many times he's been there, five major championships doesn't feel like quite enough. And I think Rory feels that. And every time he wins one, he goes up the ladder on the all-time greats. And I think he wants to keep ascending. And I think he's motivated by that.
But there's all these sort of complications in his sporting career, in that the phrase course management comes out a number of times in the book. It's sort of a golfing cliche, but suggesting there are times when you have to not, you know, accept the punishment of a bogey and not look to get a par when a double bogey becomes what happens. But at the same time, isn't part of the genius of Rory McIlroy being that he is and does best when he tries to do all of the things that he has the ability to do? And if it doesn't come off, it doesn't come off. But if you try and stop him from doing those things, he's not going to win anyway.
Exactly. You have to be who you are as a golfer. And, you know, Tiger Woods, for all his power and some of the amazing recovery shots that people remember, in the final analysis was a pretty conservative golfer, because Tiger's a very meticulous personality when it comes to his golf. Away from the golf course, that's a whole other
yes.
mess. But the way he played the game was very precise, and it was about avoiding mistakes. And I've been at all 15 of his major championship victories. And it was thrilling to be a witness to history, but a lot of them were boring because he would just snuff the life out of the tournament. And there was this sense that he was never going to make a mistake no matter what. And that's how a lot of them played out. You know, Rory is a much more impetuous character, and that's carried him to many victories and has probably cost him a few, but he can't be anybody else. Like, he has to play the game the way he knows how and the way he's programmed. And you can't argue with the results. He's done something that only five other players in history have done. So while he's always going to rue the ones that got away, ultimately it's the victories that he'll be remembered for. And there's been a ton of them. So I think Rory's been smart to safeguard, you know, his golf swing. He's never changed his golf swing for the most part. Little tweaks and improvements, but he's known that this is who he is. That's his golfing DNA, and he goes back to it every time. And it's the same with his style of play. I mean, if you think about the last round of the 2022 Open at St. Andrews, and that's one of the losses that really burns Rory and his fans. Like, he turned very conservative in that round. You know, he hit every green, but he was playing away from flags. He was playing percentage golf, and it cost him because Cam Smith was attacking and making birdies, and Rory's making pars. And by the time he realized what was happening, it was too late. And so I think that was also a lesson for Rory. Like, ultimately, he should have gone out there and tried to shoot 63 and blow away the field. So he is who he is. That's part of what makes him so fun to watch. But when he has a lead, it's never over till it's over. I mean, we saw that at Augusta last year, but that's just who he is and the way he plays the game. And I think that's why people are so drawn to him.
Okay, there's loads more in this. Unfortunately, I don't have time to talk to you about how he's grown up in public effectively, about, you know, having to have his personal life, particularly relationships with women, become the subject of tabloid fodder. And there's lots as well that's really interesting. I mentioned the money earlier, but the businesses he's developed and how you say he's on his way to being a billionaire. Just one couple of things, though, just to finish, Alan. Did he give you any help for the book, or did you need it, given that you'd interviewed him many, many times before you told him that you wanted to write the book?
Yes, I don't want to spoil anything, but I mean, the book begins, I'm flying over China in a private jet with Rory. I mean, I've had some great access to him through the years. When he signed his Nike deal, I was in Abu Dhabi and spent a lot of time with him. So I did have a lot of material squirreled away. And of course, I did want to sit down with him for this book. And Rory thought about it and ultimately declined. And that was his prerogative. But in some ways, that freed me up, because if we had sat for these long interviews, Rory's so charismatic, I probably would have fallen under his spell and written a different, you know, yes, slightly different book, perhaps. And I think as a biographer, it actually helps to have some distance from the subject, and you can see things with, you know, clear eyes, and you can give a really honest, you know, accounting. And you know, Rory's had some controversy in his life, you know, in his business life and his love life. It's all in the book. I think it's handled respectfully, but in the final analysis, I think it's a feel-good story. You know, he's conducted himself with great class and dignity in growing up in the spotlight. And I think at heart, he's just fundamentally a good person. And so I tried to capture all of that while also being honest about the other stuff and just presenting it to the reader. And, you know, I don't want to legislate to the reader how to feel. You know, even with the Phil Mickelson biography, I was happy to sing his praises, you know, his philanthropy and his random acts of kindness. But I was also honest about his flaws and his demons. And I think, you know, when you come to these books, hopefully I'm just the tour guide for the reader of a person's life, and you take from it what you will. And I don't want to tell anyone how to feel, but I did want this book to have a different tenor than the Phil book, and it does, because, you know, Rory's just a more likable personality in the final analysis.
Okay. Is he going to win next week in Augusta? I know it's almost impossible to say who's going to win, but do you think, does he have a really good chance of retaining it now that he's finally won it?
I think he's either going to win by 8 shots or he's going to miss the cut. I think that Rory's going to go on the first tee on Thursday, and there's a chance he'll just be flat emotionally. He will be this. He just won't be able to summon the magic because he'll feel a little spent. Or it's going to be the easiest round of golf he's ever played in his life because there's no pressure and he knows he can do it. And I feel like he's going to shoot 63 or he's going to shoot 77. And that's kind of a microcosm of how Rory,
indeed,
his entire career.
I've just been told that I've been speaking to you for 18 minutes, which is probably apt that we should finish there on the 18th. So Alan Shipnock, The Brook is a great read. Rory, The Heartache and Triumph of Golf's Most Human Superstar. Alan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
The Last Word with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.